Hello, everyone. I'm Molly Wood. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we try to be prepared and make today make sense.
In the face of all odds. It is, of course, What Do You Want to Know Wednesday. We will answer some listener questions, make y'all smarter by the end, one hopes. So let's go. Let's go.
One does hope. This is like my favorite day. This is my favorite day, Wednesday. Yeah, I don't know why, but it's just so delightful.
Friday.
You guys talk and everything. Friday's good. Friday is also good.
Okay.
Really good point. I like them all. Okay. They're all of my babies are my favorite. First up, we have a voice memo.
Okay. Perfect.
Hey, gang. Nick from Boca here.
Nick.
Quick question about the stock market. Is it possible that a Biden win is already priced in?
Well, funny you should ask, because the answer is yes. What you're
starting
to see, what?
What does that mean, priced in?
Oh, so the phrase priced in refers to the market anticipating something will happen and thus adjusting its levels. And I know I'm speaking about it like it's a person here, but adjusting its levels in anticipation of that. So a good example is the Trump tax cuts of December 2017. It was not a question as to whether or not those tax cuts were going to pass and then be enacted. So early on in that whole process, the market started acting as if it had already been passed, so that on the day it actually passed and one would think, yay, tax cuts, all the companies are going to get rich, there was no big spike in the markets, right?
Not
as big a spike as there might have been. So, what might originally have been thought was going to happen in a Biden win would be that the markets would go, oh, my God, the tax cuts are going to get rolled back and it's going to be terrible. And that has not happened for two reasons. And in fact, what you see is Wall Street calming down. And it hasn't happened for two reasons. Number one, a Biden win would treat the coronavirus more seriously, and that would be macroeconomically good. And number two, a clear Biden win, like on election night or maybe a little later, would be a great calming influence because there wouldn't be challenges and court cases and all of that. There may still be, I don't know, but a clear Biden win, Wall Street is thinking, would make it less likely that any of that would happen. And so the market is already adjusting for that, right? You've seen some big gains, some big losses recently, but it's unlikely that on election night, everybody's going to go, oh, my God, you know?
Either way, right?
Yeah.
Either way,
so,
you think,
so
or in the case of a Biden
Well,
win?
So look, I think, I think if there's a Trump win, there will be a market reaction, and it will not necessarily be favorable because the virus will only get worse. And as we know, the virus is in charge of this economy right now. There is no relief plan coming, in part because President Trump is in the White House, although, yes, Mitch McConnell gets a lot of the blame. So I think a Trump win would not necessarily be great for the markets and, more importantly, for the actual economy. That's my spiel.
Excellent.
Okay.
Love it. All right.
Good.
Cool.
Good.
Great.
Excellent.
Done. Next.
Boom. Done. Moving on. So here's something we talked about last week about social media use.
Hi, Kai and Molly. Jason here from Massachusetts. I've got a follow-up question to Sean's question from last Wednesday about disconnecting from Facebook. What's up with your allegiance, dare I say, addiction with Twitter? I see lots of members of the media use it as your preferred social media platform. But isn't Twitter mostly just a cesspool of trolls and bots? Please make me smart about its appeal and how it's better than Facebook.
Wow. Okay, so Jason's a little over-caffeinated. Could I just point out?
He's a fired-up dude.
Yes.
But we sent him a voice memo, or he sent us a voice memo,
it's cool.
So we can't really make fun of him.
Yep. All right, so you go and then I'll go, because we've got varying takes, I'm sure.
Jason, my friend, you are not wrong. Journalists are addicted to Twitter. It is a problem.
Yep.
And I have even over and over not gone so far as to actually pitch this to South by Southwest, but I've frequently thought it would be a great panel to get the executive editors of all the big papers on a panel and be like, how can you allow your journalists to remain on Twitter? Mm-hmm. Because Twitter definitely becomes the like assignment editor for a lot of media outlets. That said, there is almost nowhere else where you can get access to as broad a selection of human beings as Twitter. I mean, you can get boots on the ground almost anywhere in the world. Now, I'm not going to try to pretend that most journalists don't follow a whole bunch of other journalists.
Right.
That is also true.
Right.
And it has its pros and cons. But for, and I, it drives me crazy because I put it down every night. I have all these rules about it. It like sends me into a funk. It's like the worst thing in the world. But in terms of fast moving information,
they can't be
replaced.
Right, right. I endorse all of that. Also, the reason I'm not on Facebook anymore is that number one, I don't, Zuckerberg just, I just, what? And number two, I never was able to make Facebook work for me as a news source. I know a lot of people have made that their news feed. And so in addition to what their high school girlfriend is doing, they also get their news. I never made that work. And to Molly's point, I think the immediacy and the instantaneousness of Twitter is what keeps me going. That's what I think.
Yeah. And I can't listen. I'm also not going to say that, you know, disinformation doesn't also spread on Twitter.
Yep,
I guess
for sure.
If you want to know why it's better than Facebook, it's because it's way, way, way smaller.
Really good point.
Smaller by audience. I mean,
really
Facebook's got, depending on how Facebook is counting on any given day, you know, 2 billion daily active users. Twitter has like 300 million worldwide.
That's funny.
So misinformation and disinformation can definitely spread on Twitter. It is a shorter form factor. So it's, you know, harder to have like a whole missive. And it just doesn't have the same reach.
What Molly said.
Yeah. Okay. Finally, oh my goodness, voice memos galore.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
This next one is for you.
This is Melissa from New Hampshire, a huge leaf peeping state.
Leaf peeping!
So I have a question that's both a curiosity and maybe wishful thinking. Kai often says on Marketplace that if you win the lottery, you should get the full payout immediately as opposed to getting the slow payouts over lifetime. And I don't understand that. Could someone please explain why that's a better idea?
Oh, man. So I was wowing and laughing, not at the question, which is a really good one, but the fact that she went from leaf peeping to lottery payouts.
I know.
I love that turn that she made. That was kind of amazing.
See that company
either. That was kind of amazing. Okay. So it's all about the time value of money. A dollar in my hand right now is available to me as an American dollar. A dollar in my hand 20 years from now, if I choose the term payout of the lottery, you know, $100,000 a year for 20 years, is worth less to me because of inflation. So I want the money in my hands right now so that I can spend it, invest it, do whatever I want with it, because it's worth more to me in my hand at the moment than it is later when the value has been eroded by inflation and who knows what the heck else is going to happen out there. That's the name of the game.
Yep. The dollar might not even exist. It might just all be Libra, Facebook's cryptocurrency.
Yes. Yes. May well be.
May right. Well of course. Be. The con, of course, being you all of a sudden have a whole bunch of money that you could spend badly and or get murdered over.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that got dark in a hurry. Holy God.
I find the lottery to be very, I'm obsessed with the lottery. I'm totally fascinated with how much, with just the idea that a sudden infusion of that much money has probably a better chance of ruining your life
often
than
disastrous
it.
Consequences. Yeah, it's crazy. My friend Jonathan and I, very quick sidebar since we're moving along at a reasonable clip here. My friend Jonathan and I, when we were living together in Washington right out of school, we would, when the local lottery got up to whatever it was, $20 million, we would each put in $5 and win, even though the odds against it are, you know, astounding. And he would tell this story of how he went to get a vaccine of some kind at some point, and the nurse or the technician said to him, look, I'm obliged to inform you that you have a 1 in, you know, 47 million chance of actually getting this disease. And he looked at her and he said, yeah, well, that's pretty funny because I'm facing the same odds with the lottery, but I'm actually counting on winning the lottery. So, you know, there you go. That's why you
right,
play
exactly.
When it, 10 bucks in when it's 20 bucks, 20 million is
that's
not
your
a bad thing. That's my deal. That's my deal. That's where I go.
I have known people for whom it was like basically a retirement plan. Oh, I would like you to know I currently have a financial advisor who has authorized me to spend as much money as I want on lottery tickets up to $1 a month.
Up to $1 a month. Yes. Very well.
$1 fantasy is what that is. Should we do our backup question?
Yeah, let's move to the auxiliary question,
great.
Shall we? It's about a thing you've been doing on Marketplace Tech a lot lately. Steve from Massachusetts says this. Seems like VR, this is a good question actually. Seems like VR would be a perfect fit for the remote classroom. Is this being discussed anywhere? Discuss.
Yes and no. We did do this story like in March, I think, about how VR is MIA in the office. Mm-hmm, and, you know, mm-hmm. it was like, oh, it's going to transform everything. Yeah, and there's going to be virtual reality at work. And we'll just have to have we'll have collaborative whiteboarding. And then a lot of VR companies have promoted this idea that it's great for learning and education. And you can go on to a virtual museum and swim underwater and all of these things. It is one of those things where it's almost too absurd to talk about at a point where students don't have computers.
Yeah.
They don't have internet. In some cases, they're not getting the meals that they would otherwise get at school. So an infrastructure and distribution problem that's huge for adults with jobs.
Yeah.
Nobody wants headsets and they're really expensive and, their supply chain and all of that is multiplied by infinity when you're talking about school and inequities there.
So you've had one of these headsets on, right? And you've played with them and experimented with them. Okay, so I have only once, and I will tell you it was the most isolating and disorienting thing. And I can't imagine, even if I'm a 15-year-old sitting in my room trying to be in class, putting that on and then shutting out the rest of the world. It was just the weirdest thing.
I mean, it would definitely work better with remote schooling.
Yeah, for sure.
It would be super strange. And the thing is that the more immersive the experience, the more mobile you want to be, right. And then that's just a disaster. You got kids punching each other in the face and tripping over desks.
Well, you need one of those Ready Player One setups, right?
You really do.
Right? Yeah.
You need to be in a chair or in a room.
Yeah.
I mean, it certainly could be. You know, if this technology was inexpensive and widely available, it would be a phenomenal tool for remote learning. We're just nowhere near that reality. Nowhere near.
Nowhere near. But we are near the end of this podcast, actually. What do you want to know? Wednesday has come and gone in a jiffy. I think we just kind of blew through everything. We need to pack these with more stuff.
Very efficient. I know, totally.
Boom, boom, boom.
We're not here to waste your time.
Wait, can I just, from the Slack, Tony Wagner? This episode was almost a quick bite.
Hey-o!
Now you need to explain. Take 30 seconds and explain.
Hey, guys. In shocking news, Quibi is shutting down operations just 6 months after its launch. You can listen to Marketplace with Kai Rizdahl to hear me talking
and
more
Molly
about
Wynn.
It.
Yes, for 2 minutes and 26
seconds. If you work in Hollywood, I need the inside dish. Because the fact that there was no bailout for this company, nothing.
Yeah,
no one wanted the tech. No one wanted the content. No one wanted the name. Nothing.
There's a story being posted or that has just been posted in the Hollywood Reporter. Apparently, there's an all-staff tomorrow to explain what the hell happened to this company that everybody was building from scratch and has now just gone.
So much money.
Yeah.
So much money was in this company. Yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah. So, yes, that was our quick bite
today.
Keep sending us your questions, your comments, your Hollywood insider stories about whether Jeffrey Katzenberg is in fact the jerk he has been made out to be by the media or anything else you're curious about. MakeMeSmart@marketplace.org is our email address. We love the voice memo. See how great it is when there's lots of voices on the show. Thank you for sending them.
It's just better. Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera. Tony Wagner is our digital producer. Erica Phillips writes our newsletters and our Make Me Smart skills on your smart devices.
Today's program was engineered by the master himself, Daniel Ramirez. Our theme music was composed by Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez. Donna Tam is the senior producer and the executive director of On Demand. This is Tara Nieves.
There you go. There you go.
Woo-hoo!
Look, we even got through the credits too fast. We got too much music.
Yeah, what's going on with us today?
I don't know.
We're so efficient. Pew, pew, pew.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.